the Cloud Podcast, your launchpad for Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud and Out Podcast. My name is Michael.
And my name is Andreas.
We are independent consultants at VidX. We are also technical writers. We write a lot of blog posts at cloudandout.io. We also publish two books. And besides that, we are the programming founders of Marbot, a Slack bot that helps you to monitor your AWS setup. So in a short summary, all videos related to AWS. And in this podcast, Andreas and I are talking about an AWS-related topic every other week. And the clue is that only one of us knows the topic up front. And this time, Andreas prepared a topic for us. And I don't know what we're going to talk about. So this is a surprise to me as well to you, our listener. So let's ask Andreas, what's the topic of this week?
Yeah, Michael. So we will talk about AWS account structures, and more specifically, we will talk about how to use AWS organizations. And I want to dive a little bit into something that came to my mind when observing what our consulting customers are doing, and yeah, some good, some best practices, and maybe some practices that do not fit very well.
Okay, I see. So that sounds interesting. So I think we can just get started because I'm familiar with AI organizations, but I guess not everyone else is familiar with them. So maybe you can give a short introduction into what is an AWS account and things like this. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. So I will start with what is an AWS account? So I think sometimes that's a little bit hard to get because the term account is probably used for 100 different things, right? So I like to use the following two ways to describe the concept of an AWS account. So the first thing is you can think of it is a tenant in Amazon's multi-tenant cloud. So basically your account ID is one tenant in that system. Or I also like to think about an AWS account as a virtual data center, because all the resources that you create on AWS belong to an AWS account. So an AWS account owns your resources. It's basically the owner of your resources. So EC2 instances, S3 buckets, RDS, whatever you do on AWS, every resource we create is owned by an AWS account. And the AWS account has nothing to do with how do you log into the management console or something like that. The AWS account is just, the tenant that is behind all that. So that's how you think about it. And the important part here is we use AWS accounts to draw the line between different aspects of operating workloads on AWS. So I have to mention here that sometimes there are other ways of doing that, but they do not fit 100%. They do not really cover everything in every detail. So if you want to separate workloads on billing and costs, having multiple AWS accounts is basically your only option to really do that to 100%. The same is true for identity and access management. If you want to deploy two workloads on AWS and you want to make sure that these workloads are not able to interact with each other in any way, and that also the users, the administrators that log in are not able to access both environments, the only really way to do that, to isolate that workloads, is to use two different accounts. And there is one other aspect that I can think of, it's limit management. So on AWS, we have all kinds of resource limits. Limits of how many instances can you start, how many buckets can you create, what's the maximum I/O throughput that you can reserve, stuff like that. And this is always bound to an AWS account as well. And the same is true for limitations on API requests.
Okay, I see. So one thing that I want to add is that don't be confused. AWS seems to start calling the limit part also quota, so they seem to transition into this new terminology where they call it a quota. Mm-hmm. So whenever you find the term quota in the documentation, that's basically the same thing. So don't be confused here.
Okay. Yeah, very good. So AWS accounts are have always been a way to isolate workloads from each other. And what I have observed is that AWS started to weaken that principle. So it has been the case that you had an AWS account and another AWS account, and there was no way to get those two accounts together from an administration point of view, for example. But that has changed over the last few years, and it has changed with the introduction of AWS organizations. And I want to talk about why this is, I think, a problem and what you should do about it.
Yeah, something else that comes to my mind here that might also help to get the idea of an AWS account, that it is basically, so if you think of blast radiuses, then the AWS account is basically one thing. So if you mess things up really badly, then everything that runs in one account could be affected. So for example, with the limit, so if you hit one limit, everything that runs in the account could be affected. If you do some serious misconfiguration in IAM, everything in that account could be affected. So that's also like another way of thinking about an AWS account. So it's the blast radius where your workloads run in. And if you put too many things into one account, then your placed blast radius is maybe too big for what you're going to do.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. That is an important aspect that we will talk about a lot later as well. So before I proceed, I want to mention that there is a blog post covering the same topic as we do in this podcast episode. You will find a link in the show notes, and I say that because you will also find a lot of architecture diagrams there that maybe help a little bit to follow what we discuss next as well. Okay, so I want to proceed with having a look at the history of AWS accounts and AWS organizations. So for me personally, I started to getting to know AWS by creating an AWS account, and I just entered my personal credit card there. And step by step, I deployed more and more workloads and also different environments to that AWS account. So I had two different applications running there. I had test environments, production environments, and deployed all that to the same account. And later on my journey, when getting to know AWS, I learned that AWS encourages us as customers to create multiple accounts. So that was really something that was really new to me. That blew my mind because, you know, almost all web services that I knew before, basically they even prohibit creating more than one account, right? So, and AWS does the opposite thing. They say, we are fine, create as many AWS accounts as you want to isolate workloads from each other. And after I learned that, I created a second account to isolate my test environments from the production environments, because that was really a game changer from a security point of view, from the blast radius, as you mentioned, Michael. So I was able to experiment in the test environment without having to worry about breaking anything in production. And I think this is really a cool principle here.
Yeah, that's true. So one thing to mention, and this is also what I hear a lot by people when they talk about introducing the new way of working with AWS by using multiple accounts. If your workload runs in one account and you think about having two accounts and then you have to migrate your workloads, this is not an easy journey. So you cannot simply by configuring in AWS that this resource should now belong to the other account, move it. That's not possible. You really have to create everything from scratch in the other account and then tear down the old stuff in the old account. So there is no way to move a resource between accounts, at least not a way that everyone can use easily using APIs. So that's kind of where you will find yourself in a good place if you used automation to set up everything, because then it's much easier to recreate the environments. But if you start from a manually created environment, then this will be a lot of work and something that you cannot easily change in the future. So that's why that's important. Sometimes people think a lot about how they set up AWS accounts before they even start doing anything, because it's a decision that you cannot easily undo.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and I think there is also a learning curve here. So the discussion is always how many accounts should I use in my scenario? So basically, how small should the unit be that I deploy to a single AWS account? Should I, for example, just do test and production environment and then deploy multiple applications into that? And what that is what I described. But you could even go further and say, I use a separate account for each application, for each workload in each environment. And then I have, I don't know, 50, 60, even more AWS accounts. There are pros and cons for all these approaches. But as you said, Michael, and that's totally correct. It's hard to undo that decision later, or expensive to do that. So yeah, it's worth thinking about the trade-offs that fit best for your problem that you're trying to solve. Okay, so yeah, so that was my personal story with AWS accounts. So after learning that it is possible to create multiple accounts, I started doing so. Since then, I have used that pattern in almost every consulting project that I was doing. And also we use it at Vidix to deploy our workloads, of course. And then I think another thing that is interesting, at least I didn't know that, is AWS introduced a feature that makes it even more convenient to own multiple AWS accounts. And this was called consolidated billing. And Michael, do you have any idea when AWS was announcing that feature, consolidated billing?
I'm not sure. So I don't know. Sorry.
Okay. So the thing here is I was really it's really hard to believe from my point of view that they introduced that feature in 2010. Okay. So 10 years ago. So that is really almost from the beginning when a lot of companies decided to move their workloads to AWS. Okay. Yeah, but what is that? So AWS introduced consolidated billing, and that solved two major problems. First of all, instead of getting a single bill by each AWS account each month, you just get one monthly bill. So that accumulates the spending among all your AWS accounts. So this simplifies accounting management of those accounts. And it has a second benefit. You also benefit from volume pricing across all your AWS accounts, because before that you had the volume-based pricing was only tied to one AWS account, and then this was, a downside of using multiple accounts. Yeah, so that is really what changed.
Okay, what I want to add here, and you all already mentioned this at the beginning, but I just want to make sure that we highlight this here. So you get a single bill, and for example, that bill says your spending last month was maybe $7,000. But the cool thing is that you can basically still see how much each account added to the total bill. So by default, you get a bill where you still see a list of your AWS accounts with the spending that was created in that account. So that's what, Andreas, I think you meant when you told us that you can isolate workloads by costs with an AWS account. So that's the easiest way. And the cool thing is that everything is in there, including traffic, which you cannot tag at the moment. So if you use tag-based or tag allocation for costs, there are quite a few costs that you cannot tag. So they will always be added up to the account, and you cannot easily allocate them to workloads. And if you use accounts, then that's really easy, because all the costs will be at least divided up on the AWS account level.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. So if you really have to get costs per workload, and you really have to do that as close as possible to reality, then having an AWS account for each workload is helping you a lot, because then you don't have to split up the bill from one big AWS account and to split that up to multiple workloads. That's exactly true. And on the other side, consolidated billing, it's easier. You get one bill from AWS, you have to pay that one bill and that's it. So instead of paying hundreds of AWS bills this month, that's of course a lot easier to do. Okay, yeah, so that was what we had from 2010 on. And I want to highlight one other thing regarding consolidated billing. This was only affecting billing. Yeah, so there was no other technical implication of using consolidated billing. Basically, you created an AWS account, which was then the payer account, which means this account was paying the bill. And you could invite as many other AWS accounts as you wanted to join that payer account for consolidated billing. But there was no other effect on that. So there was no other connection between those AWS accounts there. And the next thing in when we go back in history was happening in 2017. This was when AWS announced AWS organizations. So really the first version of that. And I think the motivation for that is that AWS was more and more focusing on the enterprise, and they wanted to provide tools for those enterprises to basically use what they always have done to manage all their accounts from a single place. And this was why they introduced probably AWS organizations. And AWS organizations is a service that is designed to govern AWS accounts. And it started with two main features. The one feature was it added the possibility to create and manage accounts from the AWS Management Console or even an API. So that means you could now more easily create new AWS accounts. And they also provide an API for that. So that means you can also automate that. And this was also the beginning of consulting companies starting to sell landing zone solutions and stuff like that to enterprise customers. So basically a way to set up AWS accounts in a more automated and reliable way. So I think this was a good thing. And the other aspect that AWS announced was so-called service controlled policies. A service control policy allows you basically to define which AWS services can be used within an AWS account. And basically you can think of it sits on top of identity and access management. So what you restrict within a service control policy cannot be overridden with an IAM policy. So basically by doing that, you can deactivate or activate whole AWS services or even some features or aspects of a specific service. So that is another thing that came into existence with AWS organizations.
Yeah, so I always think about service control policies as, and now I have to be very careful because this term is already used as something else. So we have permission boundaries, but service control policies are kind of similar. So within service control policy, you would define the space or the set of permissions that you can then grant in IAM policies. So if you deny something in a service control policy, then it basically is removed from the permission universe that you can use in IAM later in the accounts, because it's by the SCP not enabled, so it is blocked by the SCP. So that's kind of how I think of service control policies. So it's the definition of the set of permissions that you can use in IAM and control with IAM. So by default, it's the star policy, but if you use SCPs, you can restrict that and have a much smaller collection or set of permissions that actually are available in IAM policies. So that's kind of how I try to think about service control policies. So I just wanted to add this here. Maybe it helps.
Yeah, very good explanation, I think. Yeah, so this was the start of AWS organizations, and I was really happy about that new feature. And by the way, the aspect of consolidated billing moved to AWS organizations as well. So we still have, now it's called the root account, or some also call it the master or payer account, which is also the root account of the organization, basically the account that manages the organization. And still this account also pays typically the bill for the whole organization. So this is still in place. The consolidated billing feature is still there. It's kind of moved to AWS organizations. And then since 2017, in the last 3 years, AWS added more and more features and extended the functionality of organizations. And I want to highlight a few of those changes. So first of all, for example, when you create a new AWS account within your AWS organization, what you do is you create an IAM role in the new account that has administrator access by default, which means the administrators of your organization also have administrator access to the new AWS accounts that you have been that you have created. So this is one feature of AWS organizations. And then AWS added more and more integrations into AWS organizations. So for example, recently AWS announced CloudFormation stack sets, an integration with AWS organizations, which means you can now deploy your infrastructure as code templates to multiple or all AWS accounts within your organization. So that means it's easy to roll out the same template, the same stack to all or a portion of your AWS account. Or other services like, for example, the AWS Firewall Manager enables you to deploy web application firewall rules across all AWS accounts belonging to your organization. So basically what AWS is doing here is they're adding another layer on top of the AWS account, which is called the AWS organization, and they're adding more and more administrating features to that level, which means you can, the idea behind that is you can more easily govern hundreds of thousands of AWS accounts centrally. So that's basically also the selling point of AWS organizations.
One thing to add, so the CloudFormation stack sets you were able to use them with organizations before that, but the problem was that you had to manage the IAM role on your own. So basically, once you created the account, you had to create another IAM role in that account with the automatically deployed role that you mentioned. And then this role that you create was used by stack sets to deploy the actual workloads. And this has now changed. So basically they removed the need to create a role for stack sets. So it somehow works magically. So with the click of a button, you enable stack sets in organizations, or I don't know how the feature is called, but something like this.
Yeah, it's called Trusted Organization Access. That's that's what is behind all that. That's basically the way how you grant access for the organization to all your accounts.
Okay, and with this new feature, you can now roll out stack set, or you can deploy stacks with stack sets into accounts without the need to manage this role on your own, which is convenient, but also has some drawbacks. Okay, so this is just something that I wanted to add here.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I think the same is true for Firewall Manager and everything else. Of course, in the past, we have been able to create IAM roles to grant cross-account access, and you could use those rules to deploy stuff in all AWS accounts from a central place as well. But now I think that the difference here is it's getting more and more convenient and also maybe less visible that this is possible with AWS organizations and directly to the AWS accounts with those with this new feature of trusted organization access, basically. Okay, yeah. So, so when we have a look at that history of AWS accounts, consolidated billing, AWS organizations, you could say this sounds like a success story. So AWS makes it more and more easy to manage hundreds of AWS accounts, especially for enterprise customers. They add those features that you can centrally manage all those accounts and add more and more features that help you doing so. But in the past few months, I have more and more reservations and doubts about is that really a good way of managing your AWS environments. And I think, in my opinion, centralism causes more problems than it solves. And I want to share some observations with you to make my point here. So the first observation is an enterprise decided to use those service control policies to only grant access to AWS services and features that had been approved by a board of security and governance officials. So they want to make sure that no one in the organization can use any new services that have, for example, data privacy or any other governance or security concerns. And so they introduced that concept of service control policies. So that sounds like a good idea at the beginning, but using the service control policies caused major problems later. So a few examples. So the engineers that needed to deploy their workloads to AWS did not know about the service control policy, and they also did not know about the details. So basically, they didn't know what is really defined in the service control policy. And what this results in is engineers debug access denied errors all the time without really knowing what happens, because they can't see the service control policy. And if they want to deploy a new feature, a new part of the infrastructure, they just get a denied access error and they have no idea why. So it takes them a while to figure out what's going on here. The next problem that the service control policy introduces is the engineers now have to ask for permission for every change that they need to be made in the service control policy. So for example, if they want to need a new service, or if they even just want to test a new service, they have to ask for permission. And then the board has to decide on, do we want to allow that or not? And this takes a lot of time. The deployment cycles, the development cycles get longer and longer. And so that really slows down the agility of the whole organization. And also another observation that I had is the administrators that had to make changes to the service control policies, they were in trouble as well, because every change they do to the service control policy could potentially interrupt the production workloads within the whole organization. Yeah, so when you do a mistake when defining the service control policy, you could, for example, deny all access to S3 immediately for every AWS account in the whole organization, which probably causes huge interruptions. Yeah, so this was a risk that they introduced to the system with many, many AWS accounts. So the initial idea of using service control policies to making government and security decisions to really restrict those services based on those decisions was probably a good idea. But what it ended up with is a lot of extra work, a lot of waiting times, and also a lot of risk for their production workloads. Okay, and then the second observation, so this is just another example. A company decided to hire a security specialist to roll out web application firewalls to protect all their applications from attacks. And to do so, they granted the security expert access to the AWS organization so that it was possible to roll out those rules into every account for every application load balancer. So that's basically what those what this firewall manager is capable of doing. And this also sounds like a good idea at the beginning. So you buy in an expert that is capable of configuring a web application firewall. And but sooner or later you realize that this causes major problems as well. So typical problem here, the security specialist that you have hired misses important information about all the web applications in your organization. So that results in the web application firewall rules that got deployed cause interruptions because they block requests mistakenly. So that is happening. And what also happens is that the developers or the persons that are responsible for the security of the application, they feel less responsible for securing the applications because they start relying on, oh, there's a centrally managed web application firewall that basically makes sure that we are safe, that everything is secure. But on the other side, you have a network security specialist that knows really well about how to secure web applications in general, but he doesn't know the exact details of the problems that you are solving, of the risk of the applications that you are running in detail. So as a result, in my opinion, the overall security level declines. Yeah? So this is another aspect of that. And then again, we have a similar problem that we had with the previous example. Now the developers have to ask for exceptions and to make changes to the WAF rules. So again, they have to wait for the network security specialist to implement those changes. So there's a new dependency introduced into the organization here.
Yeah, so I think I see where this is going, and I can only agree that if you don't need, or if you introduce bottlenecks, don't be surprised that things will slow down. And one thing that I was just, while you were talking, I was just looking for ways, so how could you actually do this properly? So for example, if I deploy a change for an SCP, so how can you monitor that you're not interrupting workloads? Because, I mean, they don't have any knowledge into the accounts, actually. They just look from a very broad perspective. So what I was thinking of, if you could analyze CloudTrail, because you see access denied in CloudTrail sometimes for some operations. So you could monitor that maybe. But for the web application firewall, I think it's impossible from the organizational perspective to see what actually the implication is if you make a change. You can just rely on the actual teams in the accounts to provide you feedback if things go wrong, because you have no insights from an organizational perspective into how those rules are doing. So that's really a very risky approach, because you have no data at all to see what's going on. Yeah,
absolutely. I think the pattern is the same over and over again. So I have a third observation that is maybe a little bit different to the other ones that I've described now. And this is, think of an enterprise that owns hundreds or even thousands of AWS accounts. And they have an AWS organization to manage all of those AWS accounts. And typically, by default, what that means as a side effect, all the organization administrators, so I don't know, let's say these are 3 to 5 people, they have not only access to manage the organization, but they also have administrator access to every AWS account in your organization. So that means a single person, for example, could delete all the data of your organization, including the backups. Yeah, let that sink in. So to think about what happens if one of those persons decide, for any reason, I want to delete everything. So that's possible in theory. Yeah. So, or another thing that I would worry about a lot if I would be responsible for such a setup is, so think of an attacker that takes over the computer of such an organization administrator. The attacker has then administrator access to all AWS accounts, could steal sensitive data, intrude in all your systems, again, delete all the data. So think of whatever you can think of can happen here. So I think the blast radius is really your whole organization then, if you have one organization that manages all your accounts. So I think that is really something you should worry about. So do you really want to have your organization rely on such a single point of failure here? And so, yeah, that's what I observe when I see organizations using AWS organizations and AWS accounts.
Okay, I think I get a point, Andreas. I hope you have some ideas for us. So how can we use the features that we have to still benefit but don't slow down ourselves? So do you have some idea how we could actually benefit from the organization's feature?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so maybe before I proceed, so what I want to mention is both of us are probably very biased when it comes to centralism. Yeah, so we live in Germany, which is a federal a federal system, right? We have states and have distributed everything on them. Also, we are a small company, so we don't have a centralized IT organization. And we see the possibilities and advantages of doing so. And basically, whenever I come into an organization that is doing everything in a very centralized way, I observe a lot of extra problems that they have to solve. And that is what I want to discuss next. So what's the other option here? So what can you do as a, I would say, maybe a big enterprise, or at least an organization with, I think, maybe more than 100 engineers. So what can you do? So first of all, I think it is still important and true that you should use AWS account to isolate workloads and environment from each other. So there is no other way to do so, at least no other way that really works. So use AWS accounts to have boundaries around your workloads and make sure to leverage that. But then I think you should resist the temptation to manage all your AWS accounts in a single AWS organization. So let's think about, you're a big enterprise and you have hundreds of AWS accounts. So of course you can group them all together into one AWS organization and have one root account to manage all those AWS accounts. But there's another way that you can think about. You can also divide all your AWS accounts into smaller units. So let's say, I don't know, something between 20 and 50 AWS accounts per unit, and then create an AWS account for each of those units. So for example, let's say you have 1,000 AWS accounts to manage, you create an organization for around about every 50 AWS accounts, and have dedicated teams and or persons that are responsible for those organizations. So by doing that, you're reducing the blast radius that I have been talking about. You now have smaller chunks, and your organization is split up into smaller parts, which also means that you have less risk when deploying, when making any changes to your AWS organization. And also the administrators of your organization don't have access to everything, but only to a bunch of AWS accounts. I think you're mitigating the risk and you're increasing agility by doing so, because the whole problem becomes less complex because you split it into smaller chunks. So I think I really like that pattern. And the second thing I want to recommend is to not use service control policies or any of those deeper integrations, which are called trusted organization access. I would really try to avoid using that features, because I think they add more problems than they really solve. And they add more risk to your systems. So my solution or my recommendation to think about is, when you design your account structure and your AWS organization structure, instead of using just one organization for your whole company, your whole enterprise,
Okay, so I have one additional idea, and I'm not sure where it really fits, but it's an observation that if you have a large organization, and large is like more than 100 accounts, and there's a single team that is responsible for the organization, it is very hard for them to keep track of all the teams and workloads that are working under their regime. Because if there are more than 100 teams that work in your organization, it's not possible to talk to all of them anymore. And the central team kind of loses connection to the teams, and so it gets harder for feedback to flow back into the team. So if those units are smaller, I think it's easier for the central, like the organization team, to interact with their like internal customers. And it gets much easier if the number is not too high, because we all know that you cannot have like deep conversations with 100 teams. It's not possible. So that's also an argument for splitting things up a little bit.
Yeah, so there's one aspect that I want to mention, and this is, of course, decentralization looks more expensive at the beginning because you have to do work twice or even more, multiple times. So, for example, you have to think about how to make sure you're following security best practices in the accounts and all that stuff. So there's a lot of extra work that you do now for each of your AWS organizations, and hopefully, or you may even have multiple teams that manage all those organizations. So how do you avoid that everyone starts from scratch? So I think what I've observed what works really well is, instead of having centralized controls, you provide templates, you provide blueprints that the whole organization is able to use to solve problems. So in case of AWS, you could provide infrastructure as code templates that implement security best practices that are compliant with all the laws and regulations that you have to apply with. And you can share those templates with your organization, and teams and engineers will be happy to pick them up. Because it speeds up their process as well. And so by that, you can also make sure, basically lead by example and avoid that everyone has to start on every problem from scratch. One thing that is important here, you have to make sure that you're then also collecting feedback. I don't know, have a system of pull requests or so something like that to make sure that those templates that you provide continuously improve over time. I think it's also important to provide engineers with training, so they have to know about security, reliability, cost topics, and I think it's necessary that you share that knowledge within your whole organization instead of having a central team that manages all of that centrally.
Yeah, so one small thing to add. I was just looking by accident into my bookshelf, and I saw one book, and the title is Anti-Fragile. And I think what we just talked about could be a chapter of the book, because if you have a single organization and all your eggs are in that basket, then that's kind of a fragile design. And if you want to become less dependent on whatever problems, like, for example, changes to service control policies and things like this, it makes sense to split things up, reduce the blast radius, and create a system that is anti-fragile. So that's, I think, a really good kind of picture in your mind. And if you want to read a good book, then I can highly recommend it. It's not related to any AWS or technical topics, but it's really a good read, Anti-Fragile. Okay, Andreas, I think we are done. I want to add one more topic here. So if you are using multiple AWS accounts, then we might have something that could be of interest to you. We created a solution to scan S3 buckets for malware and viruses and all kinds of other bad files. So the solution is available in the AWS marketplace. It's called S3 VeroScan. So if you search for S3 virus, then you will find it. And it's a scalable system So it can scan as many files as you like. It adapts to the number of files that have to be scanned with auto-scaling. You get full visibility into the system, how it is doing, how many findings it produces. It runs in your own AWS account, so the data never leaves your own accounts. And you can delete files if they are infected. You can tag them if they are infected. And so you have lots of options, and it's integrated into AWS, so you can report findings to Security Hub, you can report findings to Systems Manager, Ops Manager. So there's a bunch of cool stuff in there. So if you really care about the security of your S3 buckets in terms of the content of the file, then we can highly recommend that you check out our VirusScan solution in the AWS Marketplace. I will add a link to the show notes. So I think, Andreas, you can finish with a short summary and some additional information for our listeners.
Yeah, so thank you, Michael. So so to summarize the topic that we discussed today, so I think it is absolutely a best practice to use multiple AWS accounts to isolate your workloads. But I think you should be careful when using AWS organizations. Make sure you are not giving up that isolation between accounts by introducing centralism into your account architecture. So think about having multiple organizations that manage no more than 50 AWS accounts, and think really twice before using service control policies or trusted organization access, because I think those really make centralism permanent in your architecture, and it will be hard to undo those changes later. So yeah, that's my summary of the whole thing. Thanks for listening. I want to ask you for three things. So please leave a review of this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, for example, with Apple Podcasts. Please send us feedback. You will find our Twitter handles, email address, and everything in the show notes. And last but not least, recommend our podcast to one of your colleagues, friends, whoever is interested in Amazon Web Services. So thanks again for listening, and we will be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, thank you very much, Andreas, for preparing the topic once again. Very, very interesting. I learned something new. And thanks for listening, and see you next time. Bye.
Bye.